Hey guys, welcome to Listen Bitch Presents. Tell me why you're special. This is the arena where we don't just talk about success, we talk about survival because the truth is most people love comeback stories, but very few people understand what it actually feels like to live through the collapse, the addiction, the loneliness, the shame, the moments where you stop recognizing yourself. And sometimes the difference between giving up and getting back up is one person who sees something in you that you can't see in yourself. Today's guest knows exactly what that feels like, and his story is proof that no matter how deep the hole gets, you can still climb out. So let's get into that today. Today's guest is Brian Blackman. He is the founder of Crab Crew Life. He's the creator of a movement built around resilience and belief and adaptability and personal responsibility, which is my favorite. And a man who went from homelessness and addiction on the streets of California to helping thousands of people believe in themselves again. So, Brian, thank you so much for coming into the hot seat today. I guess let's start here. Take me to the moment when you realized your life had become something you never intended it. Do we call that kind of just rock bottom? What's happening?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I'm really
Yeah.
excited to be here. There's so many moments that could answer that question, and whether there's a specific moment that just led to this, I'm in the hell of it all. There were so many different points in my life where I felt that way. The last one, the day that I got sober or decided to make the change in my life, if you will, and to do something for myself. I guess I just saw that there was no light left within me. That was the day I was brushing my teeth and looked in the mirror. And there's those times where you look in the mirror and you're like, oh my God, I look really good today, or I'm feeling great about today. And then there's those other times where the mirror's not so flattering,
Yeah.
right? And for the first time in my life, throughout all my addiction and alcoholism and those rock bottoms, this time was different. When I looked in the mirror, I didn't see any shining light. There was nothing that that overpowered the darkness that was sticking out more than anything. And at that point, all those voices in my head and in my spirit, everything aligned at one time, and throughout my entire body and every cell of my being, I heard the words, "You are worth it." And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like I knew at that moment something wasn't quite right. Even though I like already knew life was not right, something internally went off at that point. And I think that was the most significant rock bottom, although it wasn't the hardest rock bottom I had been in.
No, I think that's amazing. And I think that whisper that you had that you're worth it, I think everybody gets that. Not everybody listens to it, but I know God chose us, man. That's a fact. Whether people believe that or not, you're specifically chosen, and I think that kind of stays solid in us, and I'm glad you heard that. When you go back to like the moments, like you're sleeping in your car, what is the story? What is the lie that you're telling yourself every single day in that moment?
What an interesting question, because I don't know that I was telling myself any lies. I had the most Internally, I still had this positive outlook. Like, I'm gonna figure this out. I'm gonna make this happen. I didn't know what. I had no idea how. But I always like I could have very easily at some time sleeping in the tents and in my car and having gang members in Venice Beach trying to take my tent from me at night. Some really scary, intense moments. And I literally would be crying in my tent and in my car, but at the same time, I was thanking God, higher power, source, light, love, whatever you want to call it, for these moments. I grew up in a really strong Southern Baptist Christian home throughout my whole life, and I didn't sit well with the religious part of it, but the internal light and something greater than myself, I did always understand that it was there. Not understand it, but it was there. And so I've always known that, feeling abandoned from it at times, absolutely. But I still always had this strong feeling of something greater than myself. And I would literally pray in tears in my deepest, hardest struggles, thanking God for these moments, because I just always knew that there was something. Whenever I decided, who knows when that was going to be? It could have been years. It was years. It could be another month. But at some point, I knew something was going to happen, and that kept me going. So I'm not sure that. Man, I think that if I told myself any lies, it might have been, man, you look good.
Yeah. Right.
When I looked like absolute hell, you
Right.
know?
That's funny. Well,
Yeah.
Brian, let's talk a little bit about addiction, because, from the outsider, you think about people that have no, they just don't get it. Is it really about the high, or, the getting drunk, or that feeling, or is it really about pain and how we can mask it, the majority of this? What's it really about?
For me, it was a lot of both of those.
Yeah.
That question literally just made my hair stand up.
Yeah.
It was a lot of both. Deep-seated from my childhood, I wanted to be a rock star. When I saw MTV and Quiet Riot Bang Your Head video when I was 6 years old with my dad, and my dad telling me, when I told him I wanted to learn how to play guitar, because I just come from a musically inclined family, and music just hit me at a very young age. And I told my dad that that's what I wanted to be. And he told me, it's a pipe dream. It's one in a million and you'll never make it. Subconsciously, that planted that seed of me wanting to prove him wrong. And that was traumatic for me without me really understanding it. But then again, I did understand how harsh that was to be told that by your dad. So a lot of it stemmed from that, because I wanted to prove him wrong and I wanted to live the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle to its fullest. And then a lot of it, when it first started, was just the joy and the excitement of getting high. I've always been really emotional. And I don't mean emotional like crying all the time. I mean, I feel
Feel all of
joy,
the
yes, to
extreme.
the max. I feel hurt to the max. I feel love to the max. And that, I didn't understand it. I didn't, but it didn't, I never felt comfortable. So when I first started, yeah, it gave me excitement. It gave me a way to breathe. And then it didn't. You know, after many, many years, it just became a way of life and just a way to keep going.
I get that. Alcohol did that for me. I felt everything on such an extreme level, and my brain is just so, there's like 1,000 tabs open all the time, and I'm like, all right, where's the vodka? I need to shut it down. Like, everybody just shut the fuck up in my head. Like, I just want everybody to stop. And that was the whole thing for me. And I realized, like, I don't like feeling drunk. I don't like that feeling at all. So why am I continuing to do this? Well, it's because I also couldn't handle the extremes. I can't handle so much pain at once. I can't handle so much joy at once. I cannot handle the extremes of that. And yeah, part of growing up is realizing, like, it is easy to navigate once you get on the other side of it. But yeah, vodka was that for me. I feel that. What does shame sound like in your head during the dark seasons?
I did a podcast not too long ago with this lady that was, the title of it was Rising from Shame, I think is what it was. And shame isn't something I really had thought about in my addiction or in my recovery. I think the only time that I don't feel that I really ever shamed myself, because for the longest time, I enjoyed what I was doing and I was making a lot of money. I was making a lot of friends. I was playing guitar in a local band that was really popular. I had a lot of drugs. I was selling a lot. I was making a lot of money. So I was just living high, you know, and even during the darkest times, I didn't ever shame myself. If the only shame that I can really connect with is my dad never really supporting me wanting to be a musician. Like, he would always show up to my brother's baseball and football games, but when I was in my room playing guitar and learning, he would, and my dad was a huge music fan, never came into my room and said, like, hey, what are you learning? Hey, what's that you're playing? So maybe I felt shame from not ever being able to connect with him, and that also could have just continued to stem through my drug and alcohol addiction. Myself, I don't think I really ever shamed myself, because I always knew in the strangest, weirdest, coherent way that I was destined to do something with my life if I could just change.
Yes.
But I had to go through all that to be able to get to where I'm at now. So I don't look back on it and shame myself for it.
Yeah. I feel that. And I had a drug addiction when I was like 16. I had emancipated at 15 and was doing drugs thinking I was doing it to hold three jobs, right? And pretty soon everything collapses and it took me, it's like I always knew that there was something more, and one day I woke up and I did what you did, and I looked in the mirror and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And even my drug dealer was like, you're done. Like, you can't do this anymore. It was terrible. And that was my wake up call, and I never looked back. Why do you
Hold
think?
the irony.
Yeah.
The irony in a drug dealer telling you you're done at the same time the addict is realizing they're done.
No, it was huge. It was huge.
Yeah,
And like,
can
he was never
imagine.
a fan that I did it anyway. He was a real friend, as much as you can call someone a friend. He never wanted me to go down that path, even though he sold it, and I drove it around the state for him, and he didn't do it. He smoked weed, that was it. But as far as like crystal meth and all of that, he never touched it. He hated that I did it.
Yeah.
Still sold it to me, still gave it to me. Tried
Oh,
to
I
get,
know the deal.
so yeah, it was a gift for me. But this is the thing that I want to talk about, Brian, because you felt like you always just kind of knew. And I guess I felt the same way. I always kind of knew. But I think all of us have that chance. So why do you think that some people recover and other people just never can find their way out?
Man, that's a tough one. That really is just a tough question. I got sober for so many reasons in the past, but they were all selfish reasons, like to make my family happy, to make my mom happy, to get my car back when my parents took my car away, or to get back in the house if they kicked me out, or to get any job, to be able to pass a drug test, to keep a couple of really good jobs that I had even during my addiction. But it wasn't until I broke down and was willing to risk every bit of comfort that I did have, the roof over my head, the shoes on my feet, the clothes on my back, the food in my stomach, those things that I'm so grateful for now. I was willing to risk it all to live a better life. But at the time, it's what is a better life? Like I was terrified. Am I going to be able to laugh again? Am I going to smile again? Am I going to have fun around people again? Am I going to be able to go to a concert again and not be, so messed up that I'm not going to enjoy it? Just all these things that I've grown up just doing, living life, waking up, just so it's why some people never get out of that. I want to think sometimes it's just all that they know. Well, it's all that I knew. Is it family trauma from their childhood? Well, I had trauma from my childhood. So what is it? I think, man, I wish I had that answer because it hurts my heart to think that there are still people that just haven't gotten it yet. They even may know that I can't keep doing this. It just comes down to me that there has to be some kind of point in your life. And I have to say mine was a God moment. It was just my time. It was just my time. And the thing is, though, even though that moment happened of clarity, I could have very easily gone against it and kept down that path. So why did I pull myself out of the darkness? I can't answer that only then it was God giving me a chance. And it could have been my one last chance. And that kind of scared me. So maybe some people just haven't had that full fear. Maybe the rock bottom is different.
And it's wild to me because now the internet is full of, you see all the videos of people just lined up on the street, bent over and just in their drug trance, and half of them look dead. And I think, how is that not the rock bottom?
Yeah, I
Like
know.
I just
I
it's
know.
it is heartbreaking because I think I'm gonna be honest. I think we all get the chance, and I just wonder like why some people are just ignoring it. Like it
You know,
sucks, man.
once you get, I don't know what age that is, but as you've done it for 20, 30, 40 years, I live in Orange County, but I still work in LA a lot. And I work in the concert video, audio industry. And so driving through LA, I even, lived there when I first moved to California from Texas. And it's so nuts, man. Just walking down Hollywood Boulevard and you see people literally smoking crack, shooting up like zombies, half dead on the side of the street. And then, so for instance, in Venice, when I first moved there, did this big, like, sweeping out the homeless, cleaning it up, right? And so they came with these vouchers and they would put people up in these really nice hotels, way better. I mean, a nice bed, air conditioning, heating, shower, food. But there were rules attached to it.
Stay sober.
Not only that, come in at a certain time. You have to take a drug test. You may have to breathe into a breathalyzer. And those simple rules,
Stopped
people
people.
just didn't want to live by. So if you're not willing to accept the help, even when it comes, and dude, I don't like rules either.
Who does?
I fought against them my whole life, but at the same time, those people just, that's what's fascinating to me, the mindset. But then again, I was homeless in a tent smoking meth and drinking vodka and whiskey and taking any pill that you could stick in front of my face and mushrooms and just all of it.
Anything.
Anything. I'm like a garbage disposal. If you got it, I'll take it. So it's interesting to see what really makes or breaks a person in that moment when those opportunities, are given to them. So,
I think I want to talk about Elaine, because I do think that this is a great part of your story, because I feel like we all get that gift from God when we decide to wake up and we're like, yes, okay, I hear you, there's more, I'm gonna step into it. Like, what the hell do you want from me? I feel like there's always someone that comes in for us that believes in us before we can believe in ourselves, that kind of holds space. What did
right.
she see in you that you couldn't see in yourself? Maybe give a backstory, because my listeners are probably like, who the hell's Elaine? What are you talking about? Sorry, guys.
Okay. So I moved from LA with guidance, God. It just was. This internal thing was speaking to me and saying, I knew this one girl out here and from Instagram, and I came out here to meet her one night. And was really struggling in LA where I was at, and just followed my heart and came to Huntington Beach. Ended up homeless out here, sleeping in my car, driving back and forth to LA for work every day, and was looking for a place to rent. I'd saved up a little bit of money at this point. I didn't want to spend it on a hotel room. And all the places that I kept trying to rent, I used to always say, man, I just didn't vibe with these people. They just weren't my people. Well, when you walk in reeking of alcohol and twacked out and hadn't slept in a week, it's probably not you vibing with, not vibing with them. It's
It's
probably,
you.
them being like, oh, whatever. So I kept driving up and down the streets looking for signs that had, for rent signs in the yard. That's how I was told I would find something a lot quicker. People like to keep it local around here, so they'll put signs in the yard. So every day I just kept driving up and down the streets, and one day I came across the house that I live in now with Elaine, and she, I don't know, man. She still, when I ask her today, like, why did she choose me? There was one other person that was looking at this place, and she decided not to go with them and went with me, and we just clicked immediately. But she didn't know that I was as far gone as I was. She said that I hid it really well. And but even though she had three daughters, one of them died from a brain tumor that was maybe caused by her alcoholism. And then the other two were really bad alcoholics who are sober now. And then she had two grandsons that also overdosed on fentanyl. So she'd been through it, right?
Oh, yeah.
but didn't really have any idea about the way I was living my life. And so she took me in, man. She gave me a chance when nobody else did. And she'll tell you today that, she's a big Christian and goes to church every Sunday, and she just will say it was God. God
She's
told
right.
me,
Yeah, I
and
love that.
so I don't believe in coincidences. We were meant to be in each other's lives, and I didn't know why at first. And she's been a huge support, but even my family, I'm really close with my family still in Texas, and they've always been so supportive, but also fed up,
Oh, yeah.
and to her, when she had that feeling of go with this because God was telling her to, we both just ended up in each other's lives, man. And then when I decided to get sober, she had no idea. And I went and told her, and she just said, I was going through withdrawals. It was like 15, 16 days into my withdrawals. And I mean, it was the worst that it's ever been, even throughout the heroin, all the pills and everything, all the times that I've gone through withdrawals in prison and jail. And this one was by far the worst.
Yeah.
And I went downstairs and I told her, even knowing that she might kick me
Kick you
out.
out.
Yeah, I was just at that point. And I can't go back and look at it and think, well, would I have still gotten sober if she would have kicked me out? I believe in my heart I would have,
Yeah.
because I was so determined. I just would have figured it out. But man, she just told me, I love you. You're welcome here. Go upstairs and do what you got to do. And if you need me, you
Oh,
know where I'm
man.
at.
That's amazing.
So yeah, then I started making TikTok videos about us, and it just went crazy.
That's amazing. What was harder for you, Brian, getting sober or staying sober?
Getting sober. Getting sober. Once that initial desire and that aha moment rushed over me, like the ocean just covered me, it was just this moment of, you can do this, you're worth it. And at that time, I knew that that's what I wanted. That didn't make it easy. In fact, that made it a little bit harder, because I knew now I got to go through it. And now I've got to put in the work to do it. And once some time went by, I mean, it took me every bit of 6 months before I really started coming into just not being awoke, just being able to go outside and communicate again, and start. That's when the emotions really started hitting, like back to childhood. Everything just, one thing I heard in a meeting that just really stuck with me was this guy said, you're driving a truck throughout life, right? And you're partying, you're drinking, you're doing whatever, and you're just throwing all your problems and cares in the back of this truck. And then you get sober and you slam on the brakes, and all of those problems and everything land in your lap. And that just really stuck with me. So for me, it was really the making the effort in the beginning to just go through it. And I did it on my own. I didn't go to rehab this time. I checked myself into a sober living home, but everybody was relapsing in front of me and bringing drugs and alcohol in.
And you're
So,
like, no way.
dude, I was there for 3 days and I threw a fit, man. I was going through it so bad. And so I ended up leaving and coming home. And because I had gone through so many withdrawals in my life, I knew that this was going to be bad. But I almost, in like the sickest, twisted way, longed for it. Does that make sense?
It does, actually. It does, yeah.
I always like figuring things out. I'm a problem solver, and I knew that this was, in fact, I didn't really understand how much fentanyl was being used to cut meth for the last few years.
Wow.
And so I had no idea how much of that I was actually doing. Like, I know I was never a fentanyl addict. That's one thing that
Yeah.
I skipped. But I was doing it, through smoking meth. And so the alcohol, the meth, the fentanyl, and the pills was Yeah, it was rough.
I can imagine that is brutal.
It was rough. But then staying sober, once I got clear-headed enough and started feeling good enough, I just knew that there was no going back. And I've been through some really difficult moments and some really amazing highs throughout this journey. But I'm so excited and just grateful for life now that no matter what hits me, that's where the resilience comes into play. When life hits you, how are you going to bounce back? You know, when you get knocked down, how are you going to get back up, or are you? I think that's that mindset that you have to really put forth, you know, into believing that if you're worth it, that means there's a bigger plan for you. And if you can keep that mindset and understand that, it makes it a little bit easier. But yeah.
I love that. And I think, I mean, that's part of the whole message I try to explain to people about being in the arena. Everybody's getting their ass kicked. Like, I don't care how much you get your shit together, or how perfect your life looks on Instagram, all the curated stuff. Everybody, I think we can all see through it now because literally we are
Yeah.
all, we're in the arena, and it is that
Absolutely.
point about, you know, there was a point where I was so low just a few years ago, and I'm like, okay, you're this low, so what are we going to do? Because if you're going to quit, what's the point? Like, why are we going to stick around? It is literally that it's either you're going to get up and you just start over. That's your only choice. Or what is the point of breathing still? What is the point if you're not going to keep moving forward? And I think everybody kind of needs that moment, but it is that resilience of, it sucks, man. It sucks getting up and starting over
It
all the time.
does.
It's not my favorite thing, okay? It's not the funnest thing, but
It's
like,
not.
what's the alternative, you guys? And tell
Well,
us about the
when you're
crack
down so
rooms.
low, the only way to go is up if you choose to.
That's exactly it. Tell us about the Crab Crew, because that talks a lot about resilience too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started live streaming on TikTok after everything started. I think it's like, I don't know, 22, 23 million total views. I started live streaming and just kind of sharing my story. And I'm always out at the Huntington Beach Pier, the pavilion area with the ocean behind me. And, you know, when you're live streaming, people send you virtual gifts, and that's how live streamers make money. Well, one day I was sent this crab gift, and it comes and it dances on your head and it does its little pinching things, right?
That's
And
funny.
I had just yelled out, her name was Kari. And I said, "Oh, Kari, really? You gave me crabs right here on TikTok in front of everybody?" And it just became this thing. So people just started sending me this gift, and I would yell out their names, and everybody just thought it was so funny. And then I was receiving mail from all over the world at my PO box: crab boxers, crab socks, crab blankets, crab keychains,
That's
crab
hilarious.
bubblers, just crab everything. And it took a minute for me to think about, why is this happening? But something was happening, so I had to figure out what it was. So when I started researching what a crab truly is, they're adaptive, they're resilient. They believe and know who they are and what they're doing. And sometimes they just stop. But when life hits them, they figure it out, and they don't, excuse me, they don't let it break their shell and who they are. And then I started doing some more research and found the crab theory, the crab mentality, which is if you put a bunch of crabs in a bucket and one tries to crawl out,
They'll pull
others
them
will
down.
pour. Yes.
That's wild.
Yes.
And it's the
So
truth.
it is. Yeah. So for me, it started thinking, okay, well, it's like, it's no different to me the way that I see it than Elaine coming into my life and me coming into her life. This moment was happening for a reason. And once I started doing this research and finding these things out, I was like, okay, something is here. And so I started breaking it down, like, what? So then I went and got Crab Crew tattooed on my knuckles and live streamed it and got the crab on my hand and built this amazing community that turned into more like a family. And so we started calling ourselves the Crab Crew, you know, and it just happened. So then I started thinking, like, well, what else can I do with this? And really started writing out what, like, the four pillars of crab could be, because I've had to learn how to become resilient. But I've been resilient my whole life without even really knowing. I've been adaptive my whole life without really understanding what I was adapting to. But all those, the homelessness, the drugs, the alcohol, the this person, the that person, the hate, the love, just being able to adapt to situations in life. And then I've always been able to get back up. It may not have happened overnight. may have taken a month, a week, a year before I bounced back up from whatever situation it was. So I sort of, well, if crabs are resilient and adaptive, and especially my sobriety, I've had to learn how to be that in a completely different way. So what did I have to do first? I had to get clean. I had to clear the negative thoughts, the weeds, the chaos that were in my head, the stories I've been telling myself my entire life about who I really am. And then the resilience. Well, I just explained that. And then the adaptability. And then it just so happened that when I was doing this, the belief landed on the bottom, which is the foundation. Right? You have to believe that you're worth so much more in life. And you have to believe that you can actually pull yourself from the depths of hell and rise above whatever it is you've been telling yourself. Because more than likely, you're struggling with a bunch of lies that you've been telling yourself, or that you've been fed through TV, through magazines, through Instagram, through TikTok about how people look and how they are living their life when it's a bunch of, like you said, it's filters. And we don't know what they're truly struggling with. Everything looks fine on the outside, but you never know what somebody's going through. And so to me, that belief of knowing that you're worth so much more started that foundation of it all for everything to be stacked on top of. And so, yeah, that's how it all started. And now it's just my passion to help people in any way that I can realize that we're only here for a certain amount of time. We never know when that card is going to get pulled, right?
Absolutely.
And if I can help, I pulled myself out of that bucket. And here's another interesting fact. It wasn't always drug and alcohol or family members or friends that were pulling me back in. A lot of times it was just myself. Right? So if I can get myself out of that bucket, that depths of hell, and rise from the depths, and I can share with somebody and teach somebody and guide somebody how to become their better selves, even if it's just 1% more every day, it's like compound interest, right? That adds up over time.
It sure
And then they can
does.
turn around and pull that next crab out. And then they can turn around and pull that. And it just continued to be this thing. And that's what I'm all about today. That's my journey.
That's amazing. How do you keep yourself grounded now that your life looks completely different?
First of all, I wake up in the morning, and as soon as I open my eyes, I have to stay grateful for five things. That's having another chance at life, a roof over my head, shoes on my feet, clothes on my back, and food in my stomach. And I say that out loud before my feet even hit the floor. Then I let my dog out, I make myself coffee, and I don't touch my phone for 30 to 45 minutes. I can't. I will not start my day with other people's thoughts and opinions. I don't watch negative movies. I don't watch negative TV shows. I don't watch, I don't hang out with people that have low vibrations. I continuously turn inward. If I start relying like I have my whole life on outside things to make me happy and peaceful, I lose. So I had to learn how to turn inwards and stay grateful for the little things in life. And man, even when it's not easy, I have come to the point where I, as within, so without. So I continuously feed myself things that make me peaceful, things that keep me joyful, things that keep me grateful. And then my outside world molds to those things. And then at night, it's gratitude books. I meditate a lot. And I just truly have to understand the fact that life doesn't happen to me. It's happening for me.
For you. I love that.
Even the bad things, or the things I consider bad, or just hurtful, or
Yeah.
whatever that boulder, that thing that comes into your life that makes you like, man, what the F is going on?
Yeah.
Well, if you can change your perspective for just a second, stop, breathe, and know that it's not happening to you, it's happening for you, because you never know what is on the other side of that.
Right.
It's like when you pray for patience, you don't get patience.
You get tested.
You pray for love, things come into your life that make you appreciate love in a different perspective, in a different way. So I always have to look at and remind myself that this situation is, there's a reason behind it. And I believe and I know that I'm strong enough with the guidance of God, my higher power, whatever you want to call it, that there's nothing I can't get through. And I know that there's a reason behind it.
I love that, and that truth is the truth for everybody. So if you're listening, it really is that simple, and it's just a matter of asking the very simple question of like, all right, is this a lesson or a blessing? Because both things are going to benefit you. So it is about the perspective. What would you say to someone listening right now who just believes they're too far gone?
You're not. Oh, you're not. You are not too far gone. You are not too far gone. As long as you're still breathing, you have a chance. And there are people out there that truly do care about your well-being. There are people that truly want to see you succeed and live the best life because you just don't know that you're. You could be somebody great to somebody. You never know when that opportunity is going to come and how it will not only benefit you, but you could change the course of somebody else's life. You're not too far gone and you're worth so much more. And that's the hard part for I think a lot of people to believe and to know about themselves that what's the chance of me doing something great? I'm too far gone. I can't get out of this. There have been worse people in worse situations. So, yes, you can. You're not the first one in a not so harsh, not so mean, but blunt way. You're not the worst case scenario.
By far. I love that. My last question, because we are running out of time here. If you could sit across from the version of yourself that was sleeping in the car, what are you saying to that guy today?
What do I think of him or what do I thank him
What
for?
would you tell him if you're sitting across from him today, what would you tell him?
Don't quit. You have no, I'm not going to share anything with you, but you have no idea what is about to happen in your life. Do not stop. Do not stop.
I love that. How can people get resourced with you, Brian? Where can they find you?
Crabcrewlife.com. It shares a whole lot about my story, and all my social media links are on there. And come join the Discord. There's so many people on my Discord. And this is a great thing. This is what's so awesome about Discord. I don't care if we don't know you. If you come to crabcrewdiscord.com, people will welcome you. If you're going through something, you can say, man, I'm really having a rough day right now. And 50 people are going to jump in and say, oh my God, we're here for you. What do you need? What's up? What's up?
Oh,
It is the most
amazing.
amazing thing ever. And then if you're looking to just start somewhere and better yourself, let me know. Put your email address in crabcrewlife.com, reach out to me, and I will do what I can to help the next person. I just want to help. I just want to let people know that they're so worth it.
I love that. Well, Brian, this is the part of the show where I get to tell you what I think makes you special. It isn't that you got sober. It isn't that you became successful. It isn't even that you survived. I think what makes you special is that you chose to become proof. Proof that crab can make it out of the tank. Proof that a bad chapter is not a bad ending. Proof that, the devil doesn't get the final word, and you're bringing the proof that people can rebuild. And most importantly, you've become the person for other people that I think God gave you in a lane. I think that a reminder that one person believing in you can change everything, that is what you have become. And apparently you are building an incredibly beautiful community around that. I think that is powerful, and that's what makes you special. To everyone listening, babe, sorry to tell you're not your worst mistake. You're not your lowest moment. You're not the season that you're currently surviving. You are the person who gets the hell up again. You're the person who keeps going. You're the person who refuses to quit. No matter how far you've fallen, no matter how messy it gets, no matter how impossible it looks today, keep clawing your way out of the tank. Be resilient, be courageous, be magnetic, and please remember that your mess is your message. Sometimes that shit that you survived becomes the very thing that helps someone else survive too. If this episode speaks to you, let's help share it out to get Brian's message into the hands of other people. Share it with someone who you just genuinely knows needs it. And if you guys are ready for the hot seat, I dare you to come tell me why you're special. Brian, this was so great. Thank you for serving my audience today. It was so awesome to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it. I loved every minute of it.
Awesome.